We're actually digging into a new series this morning. Super excited about it. And to get us out of the gate here, I wanted to show you my favorite knife. It's my favorite kitchen knife. If you like sharp knives and you like cutting things, this is the tool for you. And in order to make this knife sharp, what I will do is I'll take this file, this metal file, and I will just kind of rub this knife along the track of this file, right? Just grinding it down, right? So anytime this thing is not sharp, I'm just going to grab this and sharpen it up and then back into the kitchen to do my thing, right? But love this knife when it's sharp. When this is sharp, this is an incredible tool. Now, if I were to take the same knife and the same metal file and engage the knife differently with the file, like this, right? If I were to go vertical on this and just work this thing for about 5 minutes, what I would then have is a useless knife that you could probably put on your arm and apply pressure and swing back and forth. It's not going to do a darn thing to your skin, because this file, it'll wear some stuff down if it's not used in the right way, right? Same knife, same file. How I use the file to engage with the knife makes all the difference regarding the usefulness of the knife. Does that make sense? Now, the series that we're jumping into, we're going to talk a bit about Satan and dark spiritual forces and temptation. And as Christians, what we tend to think when we hear those things is we think, oh no, I'm the knife. Here's the enemy. I'm in big trouble. I'm going to get dull. The enemy is going to wear me down. I'm going to lose. Oh my, right? We get a little like sad or sorry for ourselves. We get worried. Well, yeah, that can happen to us as we are engaged by the enemy. But really, as I look at the scriptures, and oftentimes this does happen, unfortunately. The enemy wears us down, dulls us out. But when I look at the scriptures, what I see is that what God regularly likes to do is to take Satan and dark spiritual forces and resistance and temptation, and he likes to use them in our lives, not to dull us, but to actually make us sharper. Okay? Now, if you don't believe me, turn to Matthew chapter 4. Right? And then keep coming for the next several weeks, and you're just going to hear more about this. But the Lord wants to sharpen us to be full human beings, to be incredibly powerful and useful in the world. And, right, don't be afraid of the enemy, because if we're listening to the Father, then the Father will use the enemy to actually hone us and to make us more. Matthew chapter 4, verse 1. Let's just jump in. And then we'll give context here. Here we go. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. Okay, so the context here is Jesus is preparing to officially launch his invasion into the world. Christmas already happened. Jesus is an adult now. But like, he's ready to officially engage with this love invasion to rescue and redeem lost human beings in a wayward world. All right, it's about to start. Actually, in verse 12, right? We're Matthew 4, verse 1. We're going to go through some temptations. And then right on the other side of these temptations, in verse 12, the very next thing, your Bible heading should be Jesus begins his ministry. Okay? So this is prep. This is preparatory time for Jesus to get ready to rescue and redeem and save a world. And if he's going to do that, then Jesus needs to be sharp, right? He's got to be on his A game. Now, I don't know what you do when you wake up in the morning. All of us have different vocations or callings or things that the Lord has called us to do. And it is good for all of us to be sharp as we step into those things, so that we can be effective in doing those things. But how much more, if the destiny of the human race and the trajectory of the whole world, if that is your vocation, Jesus, then how important is it that you would engage that mission in being the very sharpest tool that you can possibly be, right? It is so important for Jesus to get this thing right. Now, enter temptation. It's actually the Spirit of God who leads Jesus into direct proximity with Satan. Right? Think about that for a second. The Spirit of God is not leading Jesus away from the enemy. He's actually purposefully leading him to the enemy. Right? That'll change your theology there a little bit, won't it? But that messes with us, and that doesn't make sense much because we think the enemy is going to dull us. No, no, no. Not in the Father's design. No. The enemy's got a purpose, and the Father's going to use the enemy to hone Jesus in and to direct him to a specific razor-sharp calling and purpose and way of doing ministry. Verse 2. And after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, Jesus was hungry. Okay, I just want to point out here that Jesus was not abstaining from food for 40 days for fun. Right? Jesus doesn't get kicks out of depriving himself of good things. Right? We know from the rest of the gospel account that Jesus at one time was criticized by the religious leaders for being a glutton and a drunkard. Now, if you don't like food and if you don't like drink, no one's ever going to be like able to accuse you of being a glutton and a drunkard. Now, was Jesus those things? No. But the point is, Jesus likes food. He receives food as a good gift from the Father that he actually created in the beginning with the Father and the Spirit. But now, as a human being, he recognizes the goodness of it and he likes it. So he's not just withholding food from himself for 40 days because he likes depriving himself. There's a purpose in this. Why is he doing this? No food, 40 days. Here's what I think. Because in his preparation for ministry, I think the point of this, and I'll explain it in a second, but just trust me here. The Father is leading Jesus to a place where he is going to like be razor sharp clear that the ministry that Jesus engages in is going to be a relationship-based ministry. Meaning, not that Jesus is going to be like relational with us as people, like that in a relational based sense. I mean that when Jesus engages in his mission to rescue a broken world, lost people, that mission, that ministry is going to be based on a relationship with the Father that is deep and intimate, where he continues to receive from his Father so that he can pour out and give. So we can hear the Father's voice and instruction and then align with it and then do it as the Father is leading him. It's going to be a relationship with the Father based ministry. Now, here's why I think that. Verse 3. And the tempter came to Jesus and said to him, if you are the Son of God, or since you are the Son of God, that's probably more accurate, since Satan knows who he is. Since you are the Son of God, Satan says, command these stones to become loaves of bread. But Jesus answered, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. One of the purposes of this 40-day fast, and now this temptation, I think, is revealed in verses 3 to 4. And here it is. For 40 days, Jesus is focusing in on the voice of his Father. Think about it. We talk here about how there's bookends to different stories in the gospel that shape and make things make sense. Right before the temptation in chapter 4, verse 1, what we hear is Jesus coming up out of the waters of baptism, and we hear his Father saying, this is my beloved Son with whom I am well pleased. We've got the Father's voice on the front side. Jesus goes out in the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights. He hasn't eaten a darn thing. Why? Well, on the other side of that, what is Jesus drawing our attention to? I am here to feast on every word that my Father gives me. The Father is speaking. Jesus says, I want to hear the Father speaking. Now, everything in the 40 days is this. It's turning off every other voice in order to turn into or to attune to the voice. Meaning, like, no food is a distraction. What's for breakfast? Like, that'll occupy some mental space. What's for lunch? Hey, where should we go to dinner? That occupies mental space, doesn't it? Jesus says, all that's gone. I don't want to have any of those thoughts going through my head for 40 days because I want to attune to the Father's voice. No Facebook, no Snapchat, no YouTube, no TV, no, if it's March, no March Madness. All of it is going away. No competing voices for 40 days, right? And Jesus has known the voice of his Father for eternity past. Now he's a human being. This is a different experience for him. He is going to attune now specifically and solely to the voice of his Father. Everything else, shh, Father, just want to hear your voice. Because if Jesus doesn't learn this now, if he doesn't like attune to this now, then his ministry is going to go off the rails. Right, in varying directions, just like ours does. So he's got to attune and be set in a relationship-based ministry where he is hearing from his Father and then doing. And then hearing from his Father and then doing. Receiving from his Father and then pouring out. That's what's happening here. Now think about this. We live in a world with lots of voices. And sometimes it's hard to know which voice is running through our head, isn't it? Because there's a lot of options. Like, it could be my voice that's giving me this prompting or inkling to do this thing or say this thing. And if it's my own voice, is that voice coming from my fear? That's not a good voice to listen to. Is it coming from my own greed? Is like what I'm hearing in my spirit right now, is that coming from my insecurity? We got a lot of self-talk going on right now, but we don't always know if it's self-talk or if it's coming from somewhere else. God, is this you? Is this me? We got a lot of things going through our mind and in our heart that is coming from us, and it's not coming from a great place, right? There's also voices of other people. Sometimes you walk into a room and you get this sense like, oh, in this room, I should probably do this thing. Because you know the people in the room and you know what they want from you. And you can like internalize that voice and then you'll say the thing or do the thing because you want to please the people in the room. So we got our voice, we've got people's voices, and then we've got God's voice. And sometimes when all of those things are meshed together, it's hard for us to know what's what. So Jesus models for us, right? The best thing that we can do is attune in the midst of a lot of noise, to attune to what the Father is saying. Don't try to cut a thing. Don't try to do a thing until we get that sharp in ourselves. We just need to hear from him. We just need to be with him. And we just need to hear his voice. We need to receive his love and his favor and his kindness, because that's going to make us sharp. Relationship-based ministry. That's what's going on here in the first temptation. Go back to verse 3. And the tempter came to Jesus and said to him, if, or since you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread. This offer that the enemy presents to Jesus is an offer or an invitation for Jesus to take provision into his own hands. Jesus has been 40 days. Right? And Matt, sometimes we go without lunch and we're hungry, real hungry. Yeah. Sometimes we go like without breakfast or lunch and we're like super duper hungry. This is 40 days. Jesus is hungry. He's got a human body. He's navigating all the things that we do with calories and energy and hunger. He's all on board with the human experience, right? And now in this place of deep hunger, the enemy says, Jesus, there's stones here. Don't they look like bread now because you're so hungry? Go ahead and just make those stones loaves of bread and satisfy your hunger. Could Jesus do that right now? Yeah, I think he could. I think he has the power to do that. Should Jesus, should he turn the stones into bread? I don't know. A couple things to think through. If the enemy is inviting you to do something, you better consider maybe don't do that. Maybe. Even if it looks good, even if it satisfies things that you're longing for, if the enemy suggests it, if you can discern that voice, probably best not to do it, even if you don't know what the outcome's going to be, right? So the enemy is suggesting that hint that maybe this isn't the right thing to do. Should Jesus do this? Well, let's think about that. Why is he here? He's here to attune to the Father's voice. Satan says, turn stones into bread. Jesus, Father, what do you think about this? Is this a good thing for me to do? If the Father says, Jesus, 40-day fast is over. There's stones. Looks like bread. Do it. There's no convenience store. No fast food. You shouldn't break a fast with fast food anyway, right? You get it. If there's nothing else around here, go ahead, turn the stones into bread. Do the thing. If the Father says that, then I have no doubt that Jesus, as fast as I can snap my fingers and Jesus can go pow, Jesus will turn those stones into bread and he will start eating. If the Father gives the thumbs up. But the bottom line is that Jesus is waiting for the Father's permission to officially end the fast and start eating. Satan is speaking. Jesus is listening for the voice of his Father. Now, if, sometimes it's fun to engage in hypotheticals, isn't it? If Jesus were to listen to the voice of the enemy, then what would happen here is that instead of the Father using the enemy to sharpen Jesus, Jesus then would change how he's engaging with the enemy, and then Jesus would start to get dull. And the specific way that Jesus would be getting dull here is that this would be a move where the Father is saying, be relationally dependent upon me. This would be a move for Jesus to move towards independence. More of like an I got this mentality. And then instead of stepping into his ministry to love people and to rescue the world with the dependence on the Father, listening to the Father, receiving from the Father, then Jesus takes this MO, I got this, and he steps into the ministry as an I got this kind of Messiah. That's a dull way to go about the calling, Jesus. But let's assume that he did for a second. Let's assume that Jesus is going to act on his own because he starts the pattern now of taking care of his own needs with his power in the way that he feels like he should. If Jesus begins this pattern and then steps into ministry from this place of autonomy and I got it on my own, then what's going to happen real quick is that Jesus is going to get buried in work. Absolutely, like onslaught, just like the dump truck just dumping like tons and tons and tons of work upon Jesus that he has to do, and it will bury him. Think about this. John chapter 5, there's this amazing story, one of my favorite stories in the Bible. It's a paralytic who'd been for decades unable to move. And he's gathered by, like with other people who are sick and infirm, varying diseases and problems with their bodies. Like a whole bunch of people are gathered by this pool inside of Jerusalem. And this story where Jesus walks up and says to him, do you want to get well? And he says, yes. And then Jesus says, take up your mat, arise, and walk. I'm like, yes. Like, that is such a beautiful thing. Now, here's what I want to draw our attention to. That paralytic whom Jesus healed on that day was not the only person that needed healing that day in that place. And Jesus said, in kindness and in love, Jesus said no to dozens upon dozens upon dozens of other people whom he could have healed. He said no to that because the Father had his spotlight on one. And Jesus said, Father, you're doing that one. I'm going to join you in that. But if Jesus goes autonomous and he's going on his own, right? He's going to take matters into his own hands. Then the John 5 healing at the well can't go like that. Now Jesus has got to heal everybody, right? He's got to walk up, he's got to pray, he's got to minister, he's got to like spend some of his power on behalf of all the people, and it's going to be an event, right? To heal all of the people there. It will draw more out of him than the Father wants to draw out of him at that specific time, right? Healing one person and healing multiple dozens of people, there's different outputs of energy required. I just want to say this to drive this home for us. We are not supposed to do all of the things that we could do for all of the people that we could do those things for. That is not what the Father has put in front of you. That's not what he's put in front of me. That would crush you, and that would crush me. It's too much. But if we're not listening to the Father's voice and we're just autonomously moving in our own power, however great your power is, I don't care how great your power is, you will get crushed under the weight of work that you will move yourself into and that the world will require of you. It's just the way it is, and it happens all the time. When we do all the things that we could do for all the people that we could do things for, it's ultimately not good for us, and it's not good for them. Because remember, the Father's got a plan. His plan is good. We got plans too. Not always as good as the Father's, right? The temptation for Jesus is to do it on his own, but he'll get buried in work. Here's the second thing. If Jesus begins ministering on his own, disconnected from the relationship of the Father that he's being honed into right now, here's the second thing that will happen. In the things that Jesus does, and they will be good things. Jesus isn't going to go declare war on people. He's not going to like shame and berate people. He's not going to cut people down. He's not going to do harm in the world. But even the good things that Jesus engages in will be then off script from what the Father is seeking to do. You can do good things and be off the Father's script. Think about it. But back to John 5. That day, the Father said to Jesus, "That one." And Jesus said, "Yes." And that man was healed. God's heart is for every other person at that pool who was broken and hurting. Absolutely. But because the Father was doing that one thing, and because Jesus heard his voice and joined him in that, I have no doubt that that one person, among the dozens and dozens and dozens of others, was like a seed that went into the ground and then over time grew into this magnificent thing that had an influence for generations to come. Because that's what the Father was doing. It multiplies and grows over time. And here's the deal. When I do what the Father is asking me to do, and when you do what the Father is asking you to do, it's like everything that we do is like a puzzle piece. And then what the Spirit of God does is he takes all these puzzle pieces and he puts them together in this way that is just, in the best like Holy Spirit sense of the word, it's magical. It's like, wow, how did you do that? I didn't know that this thing that I was doing was a small piece of this amazing thing that you're doing. Had I known it, I wouldn't have been afraid, or I wouldn't have like complained about it, or I wouldn't have like been frustrated that it was taking so long. I would have just cheered about it. But like when we see him take those specific things, he says, "Gary, do this. Dan, that's you, brother. Get the thing now. You hear my voice?" When we all do that, all these things come together in this beautiful way. And when it happens, we just say, "God, wow. That is so good." But when we don't listen to him and do the thing that we're supposed to do that fits in with what everybody else is supposed to do, when we start acting on our own power, in our own ideas, in our own ways, then we start doing way more than we should, and we start bumping into each other. Because there's no threaded unity in the story. And it just gets messy, and it gets complicated. How many times have we seen that or participated in that? My hand is up twice. Huh? Just being honest. If the Father is not ready to heal all of the guys and girls in John 5, and if you do that, Jesus, there will be complications, and you will miss out on the beauty of the puzzle. If Jesus chooses to feed himself with his own power right now, stones to bread, if that becomes a pattern for him, not listening to when the Father says to end the fast, I'm choosing to end the fast on my own power because I want to now. If he does that, then Jesus is going to spend the rest of his life feeding hungry people. Period. If he gets into the habit of autonomously feeding people using his stone to bread power, trouble's going to come. And Jesus is going to be off script. He's going to be dull. Doing good things. Papers are writing up the story of Jesus fed another crowd. Jesus fed more people, right? But all the while, we know the truth is he's supposed to be doing some other things. He's supposed to be doing some other stuff too. He just got locked into this, right? He got locked in because that's the stones to bread pattern became his life pattern. He's doing it on his own. He wasn't listening to the Father. Right? But the feeding of the 5,000 is just like this beautiful thing, and it's memorable for us. And that story is retold throughout the centuries. Why? Because the feeding of the 5,000 that day was what the Father wanted to see happen. Was Jesus in other crowds of people where he didn't feed them? Yeah, actually, that was kind of the norm, where Jesus was with people and he didn't feed them. It wasn't like the restaurant Jesus was like this mobile food truck. He rarely fed people. But when he did, it was magnificent. Why? Because that's what the Father was wanting to do. Now, the opposite of that, right? Let's say Jesus is teaching the 5,000, and it's 5,000 men, which means there's women and children there. Let's just say 12,000 people. It's a lot of people. If Jesus is acting autonomously on his own, and he knows that he's in the pattern of stones to bread and feeding himself, stones to bread feeding people. When he sees that crowd of 12,000, now Jesus is going to engage with that a little bit differently than the Father wants. Because Jesus is going to see 12,000 and say, oh no. All right. Hey, gather some stones, everybody. I need help. I can't get all the stones. Get some stones over here now. All right. Stone bread. Stone bread. Woo! Stone bread. Stone bread. Hey, we need more stones, guys. Get some disciples. Get me some stones. They're hungry. Stone bread. Stone bread. Stone bread. Hey, now, guys, we can't just let the bread accumulate. We got to pass it out. Start passing it out. Stone bread. Stone bread. Stone bread. Right? Get it done. We need more stones. Stone bread. Stone bread. Stone bread. Hey, disciples. You've neglected this whole crowd over here. Don't just take it to these guys. Take it to these guys. Stone bread, stone bread, stone bread. A day of that will crush you. A ministry of that will crush you. But that's not how it went down. Jesus showed up. He taught the 5,000, 12,000. He's speaking his words of life. They receive it. At some point, he hears the Father say, they're hungry. Let's feed them. And Jesus is like, oh, cool. Different demeanor here. Awesome, let's do it. And then Jesus just waits because he knows if the Father wants to feed them, well, the Father's going to provide a seed out of which this is going to happen because Jesus ain't doing the stone bread thing. He said no to that. And so then what happens, this is where the story gets cool. Like they start asking around like, oh, I don't know what we're going to use, but Father wants to do it, so we're going to go for it. And then this little kid shows up with 5 loaves and 2 fish. It's ridiculous. 5 loaves and 2 fish can't do a darn thing. Unless the Father wants to feed the crowd. And the Father says, Jesus, we're going to feed them. And Jesus is like, well, there's no food here. So Father, I'm waiting. What are you going to do? What are you going to give me? 5 loaves, 2 fish. Great. And Jesus prays, Father, thank you for the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. And he just starts to, what? Break them, hand them out. No, he's not frantic here, not freaking out, he's not overwhelmed. He just starts multiplying, like just going out, multiplication, like, wow, this is amazing. And like everybody's loving the thing. The disciples are like, wow, Jesus isn't barking at them and getting like cramming down their throat like, you're not keeping up, more stones, pass it out, more stones, pass it out. It's like this beautiful celebration, this feast that everybody gets to join in. And we read that story and we celebrate it. Why? Because the Father wanted it to happen. Jesus heard the Father's voice and he just followed in the path that the Father laid out. So, this gets really cool here. I hope you can see this. I'm going to try my best to make it clear. So Jesus submits to the Father's voice. He says no to the independent, like relationally distant ministry where Jesus is doing it on his own, in his own power, the stone bread kind of way. He says no to that. And to the enemy who says, turn the right, feed yourself now. Jesus says, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to wait for the Father to give me the thumbs up to end the fast, right? And then skip ahead to verse 11. And just read with me what happens here, and let's just marvel at it for just a second. This is the end of, like, there's the first temptation, the second one Kemp's going to talk about next week, there's another one, and at the end of the temptations, like, Jesus is pretty darn hungry at this point. Here's where we find verse 11. Then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and were ministering to him. The word minister is the word that we use to get deacon. What were the deacons in the New Testament? They were the food distributors, the people that needed food. Anybody else like, wow? Is it just me? Wow. The angels, the deacons show up, and what are they doing? Well, they're ministering to Jesus in a whole bunch of ways. But I have no doubt that one of the ways that they minister to Jesus is they brought him some food. Now, I'm not generally a picky eater, but if I had the choice between choosing to eat at the end of a 40-day fast, stones to bread, option one, or the Father's provision of food that he is sending through ministering angels. I don't know what was there. I don't know what was on the menu that day. But I'm just going to say, I'm taking what the Father gives. 10 days out of 10, that's what I want. That's going to be the best thing for Jesus. Right? And then just let me have one more moment of fun here. Psalm 23. Right, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Fast forward to verse 5. This is what David says, and Jesus experiences this. David says, you, Father, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. That table is a table of feasting and celebration and joy. And the idea is that even in the valley of the shadow of death, when the enemy surrounds us and we're confronted on every side, here's what the Father's going to do. He's going to meet us in that place, if we can hear his voice, and he will minister to us a feast of joy and peace and celebration. And so Jesus, right, receives the deaconing food ministering work of the angels. And the picture is he's sitting down to eat and Satan is walking away with his tail between his legs because Satan knows he just got played. He just got worked. What he tried to do didn't happen, and essentially the opposite did. This served to reinforce relationship with the Father, to build trust with the Father who will provide for him in time, in the right way that he wants to. And now, boy, Jesus is sharp, and Satan says, oh no. Or if you're Australian, er no, right? I've been doing that all the time with my kids, just having fun, right? But Jesus steps into his ministry sharp and ready to get at it. Relationship-based, hearing from the Father, because he's just getting honed in here in Matthew chapter 4. Absolutely astounding what's taking place. Band, come on back up. I don't see my time, but I'm guessing I'm over because I've been having fun. But as the band comes up, I just want to make one final point. So, like, this is where we're going to get real practical for just a second. I think, similar to the stones to bread option versus the feast in the presence of his enemy that the Father gave Jesus, I think, like, Jesus chose right. He got the feast. Didn't get the meager bread, he got more. I think that sometimes, oftentimes, we miss out on incredible blessings from the Father because we take matters into our own hands. We do. our power, disconnected relationally from the Father, but we're going to do like our best with what we got. We're going to make it happen. Just a couple examples just to make this clear. Like think about money, right? We in our own power, we can engage with money and try to get it and make it and do the thing. I can go buy lottery tickets, right? It's a quick way to poverty, but that's I'm taking matters into my own hands. I can fall for the latest get rich quick scheme. That's not the Father saying that. That's me wanting riches so bad that I just get sucked into this foolish path where I lose, right? We can engage in illegal activities, right? Father's not saying that, but these are things we do to get our hands on money, and we, in doing that, we don't get the blessing because we did it on our own. We weren't able to receive what he had for us. We try to get what we want now in our way, and we miss out on the feast that he wants to give in his way, in his due time. Second one, sex. Think about this. Right? It's going to get awkward here just for a second. Cover your kids' ears. Kidding. We're not going that deep, right? But I have a friend who wanted to engage like sexually more intimately with his wife. And typically sometimes what a husband will do is they'll get mad at their wife saying, why don't you this and why don't you that and why don't you this, right? That's not what he did because that's not what the Father was saying. The Father was saying, you need to stop taking any sexual satisfaction into your own hands and solving that on your own. That's where we need to start. And then from that place, boy, we will work you to the place where you and your wife have this deep physical and emotional and spiritual intimacy, and sex is a part of that. But we can't get to the feast so long as we're doing everything to satisfy ourselves on our own. Right? So I'm going to get really weird here for a second. I'm not like trying to shame anybody. I was the guy that got married at 29, right? I'm guilty of this. But like, how often do we forsake the blessings of God in order to satisfy ourselves in our own way? Then I just have this sense, like, that as a culture, we're getting married later and later and later and later. Why? Because we don't need to. We don't want to. Because we're taking matters into our own hands. We're solving the sex problem outside of God's provisionary way. We're forsaking the feast for the sake of the stone to bread alternative. Now, I'm not saying everybody's got to get married, but I am saying I think we're missing out. And then finally, like dignity. Which of us doesn't need to feel like we are of value and of importance? How often do we take that task to receive dignity into our own hands? How often do we try to impress people by saying the thing or doing the thing that we think is going to make us look important? And when we do that, Father didn't ask us to do that. He didn't give us direction to do that, but we do it. And then actually it serves to further undermine our dignity, and we're exposed and we're vulnerable. And now we're worse off than we were before we took matters into our own hands to receive dignity and favor from people. When all the while, right, the Father cares about our dignity, and he's got a pathway to a feast of meaning and purpose and like this like self-value that he wants us to have, all of us, but we got to say no to doing it in our own way in order to hear his voice, to follow him to the place where like we're actually doing good in the world and people say like, wow, we love you. Not just because you're doing this thing, but we see what you're bringing to the table and we're so thankful, and we receive dignity. We receive his voice saying, I love you, son, daughter, you're mine. So often we take the stone to bread choice and we forsake the feast because we're not relationally based, hearing his voice, seeking to be attuned to what he is saying. But Jesus shows us the way. He says, follow me. Guys, come on, we're going to take communion here as we sing. We're going to pass out the elements. If you're a follower of Jesus, this is for you. Obviously, the juice represents his blood. The bread represents his broken body. For all the chaos that we have lived in, for all the mess ups that we have engaged in, that needs covering. And we can't cover it. But Jesus came to do it for us. To invite us into a new way to live and to cover us in all the ways that we have and still continue to mess up. If you're not a follower of Jesus, just invite you to watch and observe, but know that the invitation is there for you to receive the gift at any time, like even now. So I'm going to pray for us. We're going to sing at any point in the next song or two. Just invite you to take the communion and thank Jesus for covering our sin and for inviting us into a way of living that is deeply connected to the Father, where we can follow him in his way. Let's pray. Father in heaven, thank you for this body. Thank you for the opportunity, even just for a few moments this morning, to try to quiet every other voice and just to hear yours and just to receive from you. Father, yours is the voice we want to hear, because you're the one who leads us to the path of life. You're the one, God, who just being with you is, it's what we were made for. And so that's what we want to do. Even now, Father, as we celebrate Jesus and his broken body and shed blood, just pray that we would hear your voice. And that as we do, that we would turn it around to praise and sing over you as loving children, as citizens in your kingdom, just showering you with the affection and the praise and the thanks that is due you because of how awesome you are. Thanks for loving us so well. In Jesus. It's his name we pray. Amen.